Making War, Making Peace is the concept at the center of Themester 2011 on the Bloomington campus of Indiana University. As a complement to the IU Art Museum's exhibition of Iranian posters of revolution and war, the Fine Arts Library Lobby hosts a photography show documenting the street art that appeared in Cairo last spring. WFIU's Yael Cassander spoke with a photographer, retired IU faculty member John Woodcock.
I'm not an artist. I'm not an historian. I am a tourist with a camera who happened to be in a very lucky place with my wife in Cairo this April.
Addressing the group gathered for the inaugural roundtable of the Undergraduate Association for Art Historians, John Woodcock explained that his photojournalistic foray in Cairo was quite serendipitous.
We had originally planned to have what I would call a conventional tour of Egypt in March. That was canceled when the popular uprising spread to Egypt. And we had to decide whether to go ahead on our own, in spite of whatever might be going on. And we watched the news really carefully for a couple of weeks. Then we decided we could probably do it, stay out of trouble.
Although they did manage to stay safe, John and Peggy Woodcock couldn't resist trouble altogether. That is, what counted for trouble in the days before the popular uprising that had ousted Hosni Mubarak.
There was virtually no street art in Cairo at all before the revolution, before January 25th. And every Egyptian we spoke to talked about not being able to speak about politics in public at all. It was really at risk of your life or severe incarceration that you did that.
Just 2 months later, though, it was impossible to ignore the extent to which the Egyptians were reveling in their newfound right to express themselves.
I say we encountered it. If I said that, I really meant, should have said we bumped into it. We didn't go planning to have a tour of street art at all. But one day, on the island of Zamalek, which is in the middle of the Nile, which is where our hotel was, we were going to get some fast food somewhere down the street, 3 or 4 blocks, and we ran into this.
In the middle of the upscale, beautifully landscaped district, John and Peggy were confronted with a series of 5 murals, 8 feet high and 8 feet across, exuberantly proclaiming the success of the popular revolution, using familiar words and icons.
This is 25 January, which is when the revolution began in Cairo. This is the peace symbol and get out, which is a part of a popular chant to Mubarak on Tahrir Square before he left.
The muralist's iconography often acknowledges another form of grassroots expression, one that had been instrumental in the revolution.
If you look at the upper left and right corners, you'll see that Facebook and Twitter prominently featured as, through those painted wires, powering the revolution, which is the light bulb here.
In their palette, the Cairo muralists pay homage to their national banner.
Typical of the murals that we saw is the use of the colors of the Egyptian flag in a really prominent way. The red across the top, the white across the center, and the black across the bottom. And a special thing, which if you know the Egyptian flag, in the middle of the white band in the middle, there's a golden eagle. And it seemed to me that the painters reserved gold, the color gold, in their painting for the most important message, which in this case is freedom and the revolution.
The bulging letter forms and graphic style a number of the muralists employ recalls other instances of non-commissioned public painting.
Graffiti is of all people, and it always has been.
IU Fine Arts professor Malcolm Smith shared the street art panel. Having started as a street artist, Smith incorporates its forms and spirit into his ceramic vessels.
There are stereotypes that people force onto graffiti, but even back in the days of the first hand styles came out in Philadelphia in 68, 69 by a guy named Cornbread, who happened to be an African-American, and then hand styles, tags, single-line scripts moved up the coast up to New York, and then it exploded. But as soon as it hit New York City, I mean, it was done by every demographic group, and male, female, didn't matter. It's everyone. But it got coded onto Hispanics and African-Americans as that was what they were doing, because they made up the majority of the minority population of poor people in that area. But people coming down from Connecticut on the train lines that were some of the earliest best graffiti writers are two white guys, Zephyr and Revolt, who are just straight up preppy white kids that are amazing graffiti artists.
Beyond the U.S., the infinitely adaptable art form has become a sort of international lingua franca for the oppressed. Panelist Elizabeth Rao, co-curator of the Iranian Poster Art Show at the IU Art Museum, had studied graffiti's European iterations before examining street art in an Islamic context. a doctoral student at the University of Michigan, Rao first discovered the Iranian artist known as Alone in the public sphere of the internet.
His friend was killed in the 1999 student uprising at Tehran University. And at that point, he had been a graphic design student in the BFA program there. But at that point, he dropped out and really he basically felt alone because he had no voice in the Islamic Republic. He couldn't get his work shown in the artist galleries because it wasn't religious enough. And so street art, in a sense, became his outlet. And that allowed him to express himself, both individually at first, but then becoming more and more political.
Alone became increasingly prolific in the wake of the disputed Iranian presidential election of 2009. In Cairo, the artist known as Ganzir could be considered Alone's counterpart.
Ganzir is an Arabic, slang Arabic for chain. His name is Mohammed Fahmy, and he also goes by the street name Mofa. He's very prolific. He's all over Cairo. Anybody who's on the streets at all knows him.
These days, Ganzir's occupation isn't as perilous as it is for Tehran's Alone. Still,
Artists are still not totally free in Cairo. Active bloggers and active artists still can be detained by the military forces that are in charge of things in Egypt right now. Ganzir was detained late in May for a day.
At the same time, though, the new Egyptian regime appears to condone the flourishing of public expression, as evidenced by several non-surreptitious street artists John encountered.
I actually found some street painters at work. There was a group of four or five, I think, art students out painting at night, which is the normal thing to do, I think, in Cairo. I never saw anybody doing it during the day. But they were being televised, and they were going to be on the air the next day on the Cairo TV station. They're being lit by the lights for the TV camera.
Although the TV taping could suggest that the once subversive art form had lost its edge, the sheer abundance and variety of Cairo's street art following the popular uprising bespeak the primacy of self-expression.
The street art took various forms, and the simplest possible form was the painting of the Egyptian tricolor on people's hands or foreheads. Children all over the square had that. They painted tree trunks, they painted cars, they painted pieces of furniture in public.
The language of putting marks on a wall and co-opting public space for communication is the purview of everyone.
For WFIU, I'm Yael Cassander.
John Woodcock's photos may be seen in The Art of Revolution, street paintings from Cairo's Arab Spring in the lobby of IU's Fine Arts Library. The show will be on view through January the 15th. You can see some of the photos on our website, wfiu.org/arts.